Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Hannah Colton. Last weekend's government shutdown had thousands of New Mexicans wondering what their work week might look like. Military service members, the VA, public lands workers, as well as National Labs employees, and many others depend on government contracts. The shutdown ended late Monday when Congress passed a temporary measure to fund the government through February 8th. But the episode highlighted one central fact about New Mexico's economy. We rely heavily on the federal government. Today on Let's Talk New Mexico, we're asking what it means for so many of our state's jobs to be tied to Washington, D.C. A 2016 analysis by WalletHub ranked New Mexico as the state most dependent on federal dollars, with federal spending responsible for over a third of the state's revenue. Was your job affected by this week's government shutdown? What about the government services you depend on? Is the abundance of federally funded jobs in New Mexico a boon or a liability for our economy? Call us now at 277-5866 or use the hashtag #LetsTalkNM on Twitter. I'm joined in the studio this morning by Merritt Allen, founder and executive director of Vox Optima. Good morning, Merritt.
Good morning.
I want to start with what happened last Friday through Monday. So this week's shutdown was short-lived, just a little over 3 days, I think. But Congress passed only a temporary measure to fund the government. So depending on how negotiations go in the next 2 weeks, we could be looking at another shutdown after February 8th. So Merritt, your company works with a range of federal contracts. Can you first just give us an idea who your clients are, what federal agencies they're doing business with?
Vox Optima does most of our work with the Department of the Navy. And kind of the interesting thing is we have four contracts with the same Navy command, and every one of those four contracts has a different situation in the event of a shutdown. So It depends on how you're funded, when you're funded, and how your client is funded. We've had so many continuing resolutions since really 1980, as I was looking through the history, but especially in the 21st century.
And that's continuing resolution as in a stopgap measure for appropriations.
Right. When the budget has only passed on time five times since 1980. So the government gets kind of inured to it. I think the contractor workforce becomes inured to it. So in many cases, I think it's very typical practice that, you know, we hear about end of year money for contracts and they're trying to sweep it up at the end of the fiscal year in September. What often happens is that end of year money gets placed on contracts stopgap fund them through the beginning of the fiscal year, expecting that there will be no budget. We've been very fortunate that happens. In the event of a shutdown, though, it depends on what your client does. In New Mexico, with active duty military and nuclear labs, that's not going to be a complete shutdown. So I think the impact for a brief shutdown of political brinkmanship is more of a nuisance than anything.
That makes sense. And you said out of the four contracts you had with the same boss, essentially, mm-hmm. they had three different orders. So talk a little bit about that confusion or logistics.
We have one client that is a science and technology activity, much like Air Force Research Lab here in Albuquerque. And they're what's called Working Capital Fund, which means they're self-funding, they're mission funded. So different military organizations go to this lab with their research requirements and provide the funding. So for them, a government shutdown, they're this weird entrepreneurial hybrid where they're using government dollars outside of the budget process. So that was a normal day at work. One of my contracts is with the chief engineer of the Navy. And because we want to keep ships going and submarines going, the chief engineer was declared mission essential and all the contractors were mission essential. I have employees who work for the headquarters of this large Navy acquisition command, and the headquarters function was considered non-mission essential, and we were told to treat it like a snow day and not go to work. It's hard. I'm a 20-person company, and it's hard for me to figure out what my employees are doing. So you can imagine for these large companies that have dozens or hundreds of federal contracts, how complicated it is to figure out who goes to work on Monday.
Right. And what's the outlook during that time? I mean, during the 3 days of uncertainty this last time, if there were to be another shutdown after February 8th, I mean, what's the outlook for new projects or initiatives that are supposed to start during those times?
And that's the kicker with this just continuing resolution after continuing resolution. You can't start new projects until the budget's passed if those projects are in the all projects in the fiscal year 18 budget can't start because we don't have a budget yet. And when it's professional services or a study, that's one thing, and it's time and people. But if it's a new weapons program, if it's a construction program, suddenly I think those projects become much more expensive because any early ordering discounts you might have gotten, orders have to be canceled for certain components. That can create penalties. All these costs get passed on to the government. It's a terribly inefficient way to grow infrastructure.
Are you a small business owner or a lab employee who deals with federal contracts? How did the shutdown affect your work? What about if you or your family are in the military? This is Let's Talk New Mexico. Call us now, 277-5866, or put a comment on our Facebook. We're speaking with Merritt Allen of Vox Optima. First this morning. And if we just zoom out a little bit, can you give us an idea? I mean, you've worked with federal contracts in New Mexico for over a decade. Mm-hmm. How much business are you doing? Or are your clients doing? I mean, how should we think about the scope of federal contracts in this state?
Well, we always use the word dependent on federal contracts. And if you look at a state of our population, the number of federal installations we have is astounding, but it's also wonderful because it points to the very unique resources we have here in New Mexico. For instance, North Dakota doesn't have two nuclear labs, an Army test range, and three Air Force bases, and we do. Plus, we have the Homeland Security Federal Law Enforcement Training Center. New Mexico Tech and DHS operate a training center in Playas, which is essentially a ghost mining town. So we're fortunate. I think we're fortunate that we've got the capability to have these permanent resources. And the stability you get with that, there's one place that you have zero to infinity airspace in the nation besides the White House, and that's White Sands Missile Range.
What does that mean, zero to infinity?
That means from the ground surface to infinity in space, the boundaries of White Sands Missile Range, they have completely free air operation.
Wow. So that's a natural resource,
right,
that we have.
Right. No one else has that. Our weather, we have 300 flying days a year because of our clear skies. So it's great for the different missions we have with our Air Force bases, special operations, and also unmanned aviation. Holloman is one of the primary Predator bases, the Predator drone unmanned aircraft in the country.
And give us a sense of how competitive these bids are in the nation. I mean, are these very, I mean, you've just detailed a list of very unique qualities we have for certain mm-hmm. bases. I mean, are these are pretty reliable contracts then?
I don't think White Sand Missile Range, I don't think any of our bases are terribly vulnerable in an upcoming BRAC process, base realignment and closure. And there is one coming up. I think the New Mexico congressional delegation is definitely girding up for that. There are some challenges, though. Something that's unique, my contracts are out of state. So my delivery address for all my work is not in New Mexico, so I don't have to pay gross receipts tax. But any service or component being brought in a federal contract has that extra 7-8% gross receipts tax that you wouldn't see in other states. So it's a good thing we've got some kind of national treasure status for some of our locations because we certainly are more expensive.
That's a very good point. I want to bring another voice on the phone now. On the line, we have Sue Contney. She's the state coordinator for the Building Healthy Military Communities Program and the co-chair for the New Mexico Community Veteran Engagement Board. Good morning, Sue.
Good morning. I'm glad to be here and contribute to this very important conversation for New Mexico.
So tell us a bit about your work with the Building Healthy Military Communities program. That program is one of the ways federal money is spent in our state.
Right. Well, as you know, $9.9 billion per year is our economic impact in our state. We have 18,000 military personnel, nearly 25,000 civilians and contractors in our state. And I also look regionally, working with our Southwest Defense Alliance. And I want the listeners to keep in mind, we're not just operating within a continuing resolution. We're operating in a DOD budget that has faced sequestration, a series of cuts where they're underfunded for maintenance, which has affected the loss of training and research and development amongst a number of our essential America military readiness facilities. With the Department of Defense Building Healthy Military Communities program, we look at total force fitness and how can we improve that amongst all branches and all status. And what that means is we look at social, physical, environmental, medical, spiritual, nutritional, psychological, and behavioral health in our state. And we look at ways that we can positively impact that, not just for the service member, family, and veterans, but for the entire community where those service members reside. And so that's the primary focus of Building Healthy Military Communities. And from the Community Veteran Engagement Board perspective, we look at how do we deliver these benefits and resources and entitlements to the service members, veterans, or families so that they can operate under the school force fitness domain for readiness and resiliency.
So what kinds of services for military service members and their families were disrupted in this most recent three-day shutdown?
In the most recent three-day shutdown, we've seen contractors such as our family assistance centers were not able to report to work. We did have Military OneSource available by a hotline if there was a need for behavioral health. And we also saw the VA has some shutdown as well, some of the employees there. One of the things that really impacts the service member when they are concerned that they might have to go to work without any pay is that financial readiness. And let me just give an example. If for some reason I should have no paycheck, but I'm working, and I'm being prepared to be ready to be called upon for a mission or a deployment, and I can't pay my mortgage, I'm leaving my family behind, and they have no means of making up those funds. Even, you know, after you're paid back that money, even if there is a shutdown and you are not paid a paycheck. But, however, you're paying in advance your mortgage, and that puts you in a very tough financial position, and that impacts the military family readiness that our nation needs and is dependent upon when our service members are called to serve.
And that the situation that a service member would be working without pay, is that happens after a certain period of time of the government being shut down? Is that right?
That's correct. Had the shutdown continued through the 1st of February, for example, there would not have been a paycheck that the service members would have seen, where they're usually paid on the 1st and the 15th.
Okay. So how does this kind of uncertainty impact morale in the military communities that you interact with? How does that impact the sort of attitudes just the morale to see a shutdown like this?
Well, the service members, our focus also is retention. When you talk about morale, we're talking about retention. And really, resiliency is about having the grit, the ability to be thrown off balance and find balance again so that you can have that total force fitness, all those domains that I just talked about. This really does impact retention amongst our branches of service. And so we really do depend on our Congress to pass a budget to do their job. And we need Congress to trust the Department of Defense leaders and the Pentagon when they tell them what budget they need to be effective and ready and resilient.
All right, Sue Cotney, one last question for you. How do you talk to service members and help them plan for situations like this and their families?
One of the wonderful contractors under Department of Defense is our personal financial counselors, within various branches and status of service. And those personal financial counselors are free to the service members, veterans, and their families to talk about having savings and being prepared in cases like this.
All right. Sue Cotney with Building Healthy Military Communities, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Let's take a quick break. Keep those calls and comments coming. The number is 277-5866 or tweet us with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. Back in a minute.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated Native American law, criminal defense, wrongful death, and civil rights in New Mexico and nationwide. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
Edgar Meyer is famous as an innovator and virtuoso on double bass, but he's always had an interest in composing as well. Coming up, a new piece for orchestra by Edgar Meyer, entitled New Piece for Orchestra by Edgar Meyer. We'll hear the Nashville Symphony play the world premiere on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
This Week in This American Life, Bobby Dunbar went missing in 1912. Lost in the swamp, he was just a little kid. 8 months later, he was found in the hands of a tinker. But what actually happened to him wasn't revealed until 2004. The ghost of Bobby Dunbar, this week.
Sundays at 4 on KUNM.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Hannah Colton. Our focus today, the government shutdown and the influence of federal dollars on New Mexico's economy. Do you depend on federal assistance programs like Medicaid, SNAP, or the Children's Health Insurance Program? What concerns do you have about the threat of a government shutdown possibly happening again next month? We're going to go to a call now. Claude in Santa Fe is on the line. Can you hear me?
Hi, Hannah. How are you?
Doing well. What would you like to share this morning?
Well, I think this is one of the metrics that we don't even look, besides the shutdown and how it plays a fluctuation role in the amount of disposable dollars that go into everybody's income, you know, in service industry, food, and other things. It's really not only scary for Department of Defense people, but we have all these branches of government that are based in Albuquerque and Santa Fe and auxiliary offices throughout the state. And I don't think we've really taken a true accounting of the metric of federal dollars for payroll in our state. And I think, you know, this coming election for governor gives a perfect example. Who's got a master plan of economic viability to add to our state? Because I'm not hearing it in a very holistic, sustainable way. We have micro expressions of this, but not on a statewide level.
Thank you for that, Claude. So I'm hearing, you know, the need for a more comprehensive plan. Call in now. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. We're talking about the influence of federal dollars on New Mexico's economy. The number, 277-KUNM. That's 277-5866. We're also on Twitter. Get your questions or comments into the conversation using the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. Thank you so much, Claude from Santa Fe. We're going to go now to our next guest this morning. In the studio is Matias Fontenla, Associate Professor of Economics at the University of New Mexico. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So I'll put the same question to you that I put to Merritt. Can you characterize just the scope or the size of the federal influence in New Mexico and also compared to other states?
Right. So all the federal dollars that come to New Mexico are about 30% of New Mexico's economy. But that's not just that, because they create a multiplier effect. So having bases and federal dollars come here, then people that receive those dollars spend them in the community, and so we're heavily dependent on it. So it's that 30% figure is actually, with a multiplier effect, becomes incredibly important, right?
And that's a much stronger impact than many other states. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. We're usually top three or four, top five of receiving having the greatest percentage. Of course, in total amounts, D.C., Virginia, these states, Maryland, will get way more dollars. But because we're such a poor state and we have so, relatively speaking, so few businesses and so small, not too many large companies, it becomes overwhelmingly the game in town, right?
Mm-hmm. And just, you know, Googling around, looking up statistics, preparing for this program, I found it a little bit difficult to get good statistics on what the federal dollars are coming in, where they're going, just between, you know, grants, contracts, loans, and other assistance. USAspending.gov reports federal agencies spend a total of $21 billion. That was for fiscal year 17. Is there good data on the amount of federal spending in New Mexico that you can tell?
It used to be that the U.S. Census Bureau would report this data, and they stopped in 2010, I believe. And since then, different organizations are giving us those numbers. The Pew Trust is giving that information. In general, when we're talking about, you know, these big macroeconomic data, these aggregate numbers, you're never going to be exactly. And, you know, 2017 numbers are sometimes based on or come out a couple of years later. So you generally have to talk ballpark, right? And you ideally, you would say not the first or the last or the best or the smallest, but top five, top 10 would be a better measure to talk about when we're talking macro.
Let's take a listener call now. Calling in from Santa Fe, we have Oliver on the line. Good morning. Hi, Oliver.
How are you doing?
Doing well. What would you like to add?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that we're dealing with is a continued increase in federal reliance on military dollar, homeland security, policing, those types of funds, and the decrease in the, I guess, the social-type programming, and to the point where the federal government isn't really living up to its responsibility to states for those states having to take the responsibility of funding for these types of programming in those other areas.
And, we're having a hard time hearing you, Oliver. But I'm hearing you say, you know, the state needs to be picking up the slack, essentially, after federal funding. Thank you for your comment. We kind of lost you there. Back to Matias Fontenla, professor of economics here in the studio. Do you have any response to sort of those last two comments? So, you know, the state lawmakers should have a more comprehensive plan. They should be picking up the slack. What's your reaction?
Right. It's hard. It's not as easy to do. If it was easy to do, then we would have done it already, right? To develop as a state, you need many things going right, and it may take many, many years. For example, one of the big issues with New Mexico is the lack of skilled workforce, qualified workforce, and companies may not locate here just because there's not enough availability of high-skilled people. Well, to fix that, it may take us 20, 30, 40 years of investing now in all the way from K through 12 and then the universities, and it may take you 20 years for a very comprehensive and well-done program to increase education to pan out, right? So it's not that easy. And it's not just that. It's not just workforce. There's so many other variables that you need for development all working at the same time. So it's not a simple solution. We're in a world where people want to give quick, easy sound bites, but unluckily, this is not the case.
But you're an economist, right?
Yes. We always say on the other hand and things like that.
What role should the federal government play in New Mexico's economy? If you're listening in, give us a call, 277-5866, or shoot us an email, letstalknm@kunm.org. We have a listener on the line. Catherine in Albuquerque, you're on air.
Yes. Yes, ma'am. I am responding to the comments about military and their families. My father is a veteran, and I am a resident here in Albuquerque. I'm starting a foundation called Daughters of Veterans, and I'm looking for help with donations and things like that. When my father was in the Marines, he did humanitarian relief, and so that's probably why I have the values I do. We were also very poor, and I think that sometimes there's a bad attitude in this town toward veterans. I'd like to see them get more help with jobs and things like that, too. So the purpose of the foundation is to create scholarship funding for daughters of veterans, and maybe not just women, but because my own education was disrupted when I was homeless for 3 years, and my father was raising 6 people and could not afford to pay for my schooling.
And Catherine, how were you affected by the shutdown over the weekend?
I wasn't affected, although I have some inventions that I'd like to present maybe to the Air Force Research Lab, because I am looking for employment so that I won't be homeless again. It was a very, very, not a very good experience.
All right. Catherine in Albuquerque, thank you so much for that call. Back to Professor Matias Fontenla here in the studio. Looking at the background a little bit, has New Mexico always had such a big federal sector? And thoughts on why?
Well, New Mexico is one of the youngest states, and during World War II, it was identified as a place, and it all started with Los Alamos National Labs, and it went from there. Sandia and Kirkland and White Sands were all consequences of Los Alamos. And since then, we've been heavily dependent on federal dollars. So that is good, right? Because before that, there was even less. So this is all addition. One of the things that I wanted to mention is, and this last call reminded me of it, is when we're talking about federal funds coming to New Mexico, we're focusing a lot on military and the labs, but about half of the funds that come to New Mexico are related to Social Security, Medicaid, and things like that, right? And this is also a consequence of New Mexico being one of the poorest states. Because then it becomes so overwhelmingly important, Medicaid, Social Security, welfare, these kinds of payments.
Absolutely, and thank you for bringing that up. I wanted to throw that to listeners as well. Do you depend on those federal assistance programs like Medicaid, SNAP, or others? Give us a call into the show, 277-5866. And I want to put that also to our other guest, Merritt Allen of Vox Optima, because you're also involved in the disability community, is that right?
That's correct. I'm on the board of Adelante.
Thank you. So that's an organization that gets a lot of federal dollars. Can you talk about how that service provision is disrupted by shutdowns?
Well, I'd like to kind of describe what the Ability One program is about. It's a federal program where nonprofits who employ the severely disabled and provide job opportunities for them are able to compete in a narrow band for government contracts. And this could be anything from supply chain management to facilities management. There's a huge uniform factory in El Paso that's run by an Ability One firm. Adelante has a number of contracts. The most interesting, or I would say the most visible, is in Artesia with the Fleet, the Federal Law Enforcement Training Academy. It's a facilities management contract and allows New Mexicans with severe disabilities to be able to be productive and have jobs and have that sense of self-worth and pride. And they're also helping grow law enforcement. So I think that's an exciting program, and it's huge for the disabled community. The challenge you have with the ongoing continuing resolution situation, more than the shutdown, is it's hard to get new training classes scheduled when you don't know what your budget is yet. and that can keep sliding things to the right if you don't know, if you don't have the current year funding to run the training classes you need to run.
Mm-hmm. And the funding levels for those programs, so Medicaid, SNAP, Title I grants, Section 8 housing, all of those are dependent on the population counted in the census, which is every 10 years. Professor Fontenla, can you talk briefly about concerns around the census coming up in 2020?
Right. The census is incredibly important. It tries to count every single person in the country. It's not just a survey, but counting everybody. And it matters tremendously that it's done well, especially for New Mexico, where we're so dependent on federal dollars, because then federal aid is allocated according to census. And there's concerns because they're saying they will there's issues with funding of the Census Bureau towards the census. They have stopped providing the census in Spanish, and Spanish is a legal language here in New Mexico, and there's many people that are U.S. citizens that speak Spanish or prefer to speak Spanish, so that has issues. And then the current administration has said that they want to ask questions about citizenship and whether the people here, current people being counted, are, they want to add questions whether they are legal or not here in this country. And this poses issues for New Mexico, again, because this ends up influencing the federal dollars that we get, things for education, Medicaid, infrastructure, roads, things like that. And New Mexico is one of the states that is bound to lose the most if the census is underfunded, undercounted, and poor people and people in rural areas are undercounted, underrepresented.
And remind us again, you said it a few minutes ago, but I just want to underscore the proportion of federal dollars coming into New Mexico that are those assistance programs.
Right, and that's about half of what comes to New Mexico, right? It's equally or more important than the labs and money coming in for those things, for defense and things like that.
Thank you. I just want to get in a comment from Sue Contney, who we had on. This is on Twitter. She had a correction to something she said earlier. She says military pay doesn't stop during deployment, and also that military members can also apply for the Sailors and Soldiers Act. Thank you, Sue. What are the benefits of New Mexico being home to so many federal jobs? What role should the federal government play in New Mexico's economy and in service provision? Give us a call here on Let's Talk New Mexico, 1-877-899-5866 if you're outside of Albuquerque, or 277-5866 if you're closer in town here. Going back to Professor Fontenla here in the studio, maybe this is a simpler point, but can you give us just a brief explanation? Isn't over-reliance on any one source inherently unhealthy for an economy?
Yes, it's risky, right? Putting all your eggs in one basket is risky. However, you know, there's positive things about this. And for example, one of the positive things, at least the federal government is stable. So while it's risky, it's not as risky because federal dollars tend to be not move as much. So New Mexico, what happens with New Mexico is when the economy is doing really well, like it is right now, then we look as if we were behind. But when the economy tanks, then we remain more or less stable. So then we, relatively speaking, get saved from these recessions. So in that sense, it's positive. It helps. And the other thing that could be positive, but we haven't as a state really benefited from it and used that opportunity, is that when you have things like the labs coming, you should have businesses coming in and starting because of the labs, private businesses that would provide jobs and that would do this. But this hasn't been the case as much in New Mexico, and that's where we have not really passed. A perfect example of it is Microsoft, right? Microsoft was founded, started in Albuquerque in the 1970s because of the labs, because the labs had the big computers, and so Bill Gates and Paul Allen decided to come here and start their company here. But eventually they left because they didn't have the services, they didn't have the skilled workforce that they were looking for. And, you know, they're saying that they left because they ran into debt and they were young, hippie-looking people and no bank would give them credit. So then they had to go back to Seattle because Bill Gates' dad paid for their legal fees. But that's an example of, you know, we would be a different city if Microsoft would have stayed here. We would be like Seattle, right? Well, that's positive and negative things.
What are the benefits of New Mexico being home to so many federal jobs? What role should the federal government play in our state's economy? Give us a call, 277-5866, or put a comment on our Facebook. We're going to welcome another guest to the conversation now. Joining us by phone is Gary Tongis, president of Albuquerque Economic Development Incorporated. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning, Hannah. Thank you.
So did you catch the last few minutes of the conversation? I mean, what do you want to add to this question of what factors need to be in place to build a strong private sector?
Well, we'll certainly try. The first is we want to do everything we can to hang on to that federal investment that we have, of course, as well as the private investment, private companies we have. But we must continue to, as a state, look at how we fare compared to our competitors. What are the things can we do to stimulate investment? And I think that the state really has done a wonderful job of positioning itself to better compete over the last 4 or 5 years or so with some of the changes that have been put in place. And so New Mexico, far more competitive location, and we're just starting to see, I think, early stages of response to the changes that the state put in effect.
All right, Gary, stay with us. We're going to go to a quick break. You can call in 1-877-899-5866 or email letstalknm@kunm.org. Call us 277-5866. We're talking about federal influence in the New Mexico economy.
Is your New Year's resolution to give your unwanted car or truck or RV to KUNM? We can help you get that one taken care of right away. Just call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227. Do you want to help keep KUNM going strong this year? Do yourself and us a favor. Donate that unwanted vehicle and get the year off to a great start. Call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Cree Nation singer and songwriter Buffy St. Marie joins us on the next Native America Calling. We'll hear more about her new album, Medicine Songs. Here's one of the songs that's gaining a lot of attention.
When the young woman or when the young man, sometimes you got to take a stand. Just because you think you can, you got to fight.
We hope you'll join us as we hear more from Buffy St. Marie.
Sometimes you got to take a stand.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM 89.9. I'm Hannah Colton. We're talking this morning about how to diversify our economy in a state that has a lot of federal workers and spending. Were you affected by the shutdown earlier this week? What are the benefits of New Mexico being home to so many federal jobs and so much federal funding? What is your town doing to support private companies? Call us 277-5866. And on the line now, we have Gary Tongis, president of Albuquerque Economic Development Incorporated. Hi again, Gary.
Hi. Glad to be with you.
Thank you. So we've been talking a lot about the labs and the military bases. Seems like they're not going anywhere. Is there room, do you think, for transitioning federal workers into the private sector? Or is it more a matter of managing growth and making sure that we have growth in the private sector?
Well, what we focus on more through our organization is the latter part of that, in working with existing companies, existing business and industry, for their expansion, retention and expansion, as well as recruiting new employers into the marketplace. And so clearly there are opportunities for governmental workers to transition into the private sector. There are extraordinary numbers of jobs that are available in a variety of sectors throughout the Albuquerque metro area. One of the things that we hear from employers locally is, I need more talent. I need applicants. I need to work more closely with whether it's CNM or UNM, or getting our name out about what some of the opportunities are here. And so I think abundant opportunities for anyone who's interested in finding a job in the private sector. And frankly, I think that we're going to see much more private investment coming this way, both through the expansion of existing firms, and we're talking with many of those now about what their plans are for the year ahead, as well as prospective companies, new employers that are giving consideration to opening their doors in the Albuquerque metro area.
Matthias Fontenla, I heard you were sort of nodding your head during that. Do you have anything to add there?
A good example is what we've been hearing the news lately about Amazon and Amazon headquarters, right? And when they were looking for headquarters too. And interesting to see was what they were looking for. And they just came up with a list of the 20 finalists, and Albuquerque was not there. Many things that they needed, we don't have, right? We don't have skilled workers. We don't have infrastructure. I would say I love New Mexico. I would say we have the best quality of life here, right? And the best weather and the best mountains. But we're lacking in other things that will not make it desirable for big companies to come and start here.
Merritt Allen, any thoughts on transitioning federal workers into private sector, other factors that would help boost the private sector in New Mexico?
Well, and to Matthias's earlier point, there's a reason I'm a defense contractor, because I'm working on 3 to 5 year contracts. It's very stable for a small business. I like that. I hire veterans. I hire former federal workers. Some people call it the revolving door syndrome, because essentially I built a business on doing what I did on active duty in the Navy. I was an economist by training. The Navy made me a public affairs officer, which is essentially the press officer responsible for outreach for the Navy. And so I started Vox Optima to provide strategic communication services for government clients. I've had some private sector clients, but they don't have the budget. And when you think of public relations as being essentially overhead, you want to go to someone who's got a larger budget for that overhead. So, a plug, Vox Optima is hiring veterans and former government workers. But I am going to put you back. I'm going to put you back on the government site with a different badge and maybe a different wardrobe.
So that's another a plus, you're saying, is those contracts are fairly stable.
Absolutely.
One of the big things about the labs is that they innovate, right? They work on, even if they're working on perhaps defense, a lot of the things that they find, the new innovations, the new technological innovations, could become important products in the private industry. So something really nice would be that, engineers or people that at the labs that have great ideas, that they have the resources and the funding to be able to start private companies right here in the area.
And let's go back to Gary Tongis on the line. In your earlier career, you worked for chambers of commerce in several different cities. Can you talk about promising strategies you've seen in terms of supporting entrepreneurs or encouraging local businesses to expand?
Sure. Well, the best that I have seen in terms of entrepreneurship development is actually here in Albuquerque. And I think that is a great story that deserves considerable more attention. We need to be consistent about that as a community. That effort really launched only within, the last 4 years or so. And yet you look at how all of the different respective organizations from the universities, CNM, private sector players as well, who have stepped up along with a handful of different initiatives and grant-making institutions, everybody who has brought resources and manpower together to say, look, we can be different. We can do things differently, I should say. And you look at the Innovate ABQ corridor and the new Rainforest Initiative, and now what CNM is doing with Makerspace and with Fat Pipe across the street, there is considerable momentum within, just a quarter mile, half mile of that intersection. I think that that continues to blossom, and we have others who will be looking at Albuquerque for that. That's not an initiative out of our office, but one about which we're very excited. But I think what's important is not only do we continue to give all the support in the world that we can to that, but we recognize that no single strategy is going to get us to where we need to be as a community or as a state. And so we need to be helping people to start their new business through initiatives like the ones I've just mentioned, as well as retaining existing businesses and recruiting new employers into the area. It's all of those things. That's where you see other communities that are thriving, is that they have a multifaceted approach, different organizations tackling different initiatives that are really starting to make for real change, or not just starting, but have made real change in their respective communities.
We're going to go to a caller now in Santa Fe. David, you are on air. David, what's your comment?
Well, I came here in 1981 as an investment banker, and I started an entrepreneur forum. They're now known as Angel Forums, where entrepreneurs would address a room full of angels and for 5 minutes. And if the angels wanted to meet with them afterward, talk about funding them, that occurred. And the Easy Pass was founded that way by Gary Seawright, who was came from the lab. And since I'm an investment banker, I know how to raise money. So I heard of another tech transfer, Tara Los Alamos invited me up to hear some pitches. And I did a tech transfer called Mesa Diagnostics. I raised $3 million for that.
David, we're getting a really loud noise on your line. I'm sorry. Thank you so much for calling in to speak about your startup efforts here. We're going to go straight to another caller, Henry in Santa Fe. You're on air now. Henry,
Hi.
Good morning. Hi. Good
morning. Hi, I'm a state employee, and I have in the past worked for Los Alamos on the Human Genome Project and also worked for an NSA at Kirtland. But I've also worked in the public schools here in New Mexico. My wife works for Santa Fe Community College, and she works with the entrepreneurial program. And she works closely with Los Alamos and with other organizations in the state. And we do have a great opportunity to change a lot of what our problems are. But I'll be giving you sort of a personal point of view, is that my son is a biomedical engineering student who couldn't get into the college programs here because they didn't offer a biomedical engineering program 4 years ago in the state. So he's left and gone to Colorado and is now soon going to be working for Medtronic. But unfortunately, we can't hold on to these really bright students. And I think this is a constant problem. We train them through the New Mexico Supercomputer Challenge We get these kids up to speed, but very few of them come back. And I think this is still a big problem of retention. We work with interns here at the state of New Mexico, and we train them in IT. But again, I had a Hamed student who's now working in the LA area because they simply couldn't find jobs here. And I think this is a problem partly because of how our society's built. And I just don't know if there's a simpler solution to the education needs of these kids. And keeping them in the state has been a long-term problem.
Thank you, Henry, for your call. Gary Tonjes on the line from Albuquerque Economic Development Incorporated. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think he makes some very good points there. We have to continue, and I think that they are. I mean, we see it on a regular basis. We have very close working relationships with Central New Mexico Community College, which will customize programs for an unbelievable number of different employers or industry sectors when it is that they have forecast for employment opportunities. And then the university is always giving consideration to, because we see it in our conversations with them and with existing companies or prospective ones, how it is that they can be better partners with, integrate programs that are beneficial to our students that happen to marry up with that which employers are looking for. And so we always have, when we're talking with prospective employers considering the area, we are always engaging them with UNM as well as CNM top leadership so that they're hearing what those respective needs are. And it's not for the short term, but the long term. What's that pipeline going to look like in terms of talent? And clearly, in not just our country, but in the world today, that is the big issue, is where are you going to find the talent? How are you growing the talent? And then what are you doing, at the local level to support employers who are trying to find that talent? And, are we doing all that we can to make this the most attractive business environment or most attractive environment?
Thanks, Gary. We've got just a half minute left. I wanted to throw that also to Matias and Merritt here. Final thoughts on how to make that balance of economic development.
Right. I agree with Gary, what you just said. UNM is working hard, and I always hear President Abdallah say that UNM is part of the community and we're working hard to solve all these issues. But there's so many pieces that need to fit together. And if you educate them, but then there's no businesses, then they will leave, right? And so it's just complicated.
Well, I would challenge Gary a program to get people to come back. I grew up in Silver City. I'm a graduate of Silver High School. Being in the Navy, I couldn't be in New Mexico. But once I got out of the Navy, I came back. And I think a lot of people want to come back. And it's great for folks to see a different perspective and our young people to go work for large companies out of state and then come back. So let's bring everybody back.
Thank you for that. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you to everyone who called in this morning to share your thoughts. Thank you to our guests, Merritt Allen of Vox Optima, Professor Matias Fontenla here at UNM Economics, Sue Contney, and Gary Tonjes. The conversation doesn't have to end here. Use the hashtag #LetsTalkNM on Twitter or comment on our Facebook page. Next week, we'll take an in-depth look at issues of race, immigration, and the current political climate. If you missed any part of the show today, you can listen on our website, kunm.org, or subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. I'm Hannah Colton. Thanks to the D-Numbers in Santa Fe for letting us use their song as our theme music. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Victor Onimole screened your calls today. Sarah Trujillo live-tweeted the show. And Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.